You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
John Kanemaker is director of the film animation program at NYU. As a filmmaker, he's won an Emmy and a Peabody and an Academy Award for Best Animated Short. He's also written a number of books on animation, the latest of which from Disney Editions is called Two Guys Named Joe, Master Animation Storytellers Joe Grant and Joe Ramp. And I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. It's great to see you again.
This book is essentially two biographies of animation giants, although not necessarily well-known, from two different eras. What ties them together other than the fact that they share a first name?
Well, a couple of things. I knew them both, so there's a personal connection. And I used to interview both of them for other books and periodicals and got to be friends with them. They both died in 2005, and it was a loss to everybody who knew them.
One was rather elderly, the other one was rather young.
Joe Grant was 97 when he died and still working. And Joe Ramft was 45, and it was a tragic car accident that took his life.
Now, you begin, you flip-flop what we might have expected, and you begin the book with Joe Ramft, the younger one, the more recent one. Why that?
I pondered about that. I thought it would be interesting to see where we are, say, today, and then find out where the traditions came from. Joe Ramft was someone who revered people like Bill Peet, who was arguably Disney's greatest story artist, who later became a famous children's book illustrator. And he also admired Joe Grant very much. They did overlap on a couple of productions, but they pretty much worked in separate spheres, in separate generations.
Well, you won't object if we begin with Joe Grant.
No, of course not.
Born in 1908, the son of a newspaper illustrator. So did he learn the art of drawing from his father?
Indeed. He literally was looking over his shoulder at the Hearst papers where George Grant lived. And he would also pore through his father's art books. He had these marvelous books from Germany and pictures of Heinrich Kley's illustrations and Olaf Gulbrandsen. And Joe was affected by this. He just thought it was a marvelous school. His father was his training school.
And he became a caricaturist. You include some of the caricatures, and he was very good.
Yes, he was excellent.
But I would have thought that would have led him to doing something like Betty Boop if he decided to go into animation rather than Mickey Mouse.
Well, Walt Disney got to him first.
Did Disney just approach him?
Disney did. He saw his stuff regularly in the L.A. Record starting in 1928. And in 1933, Disney was going to do a short called Mickey's Gala Premiere, and that was to involve all these celebrity caricatures. And they had been actually, shall we say, borrowing from Joe Grant anyway for earlier films in which they used Hollywood caricatures. So he said, why don't we go to the source? So they contacted Joe Grant. He came in. He met Disney, and he fell in love with animation. He just couldn't see anything else, and he loved what they were doing. He said he walked down the hall the first day to meet Walt Disney in 1933, and there was music playing that he'd never heard before, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf? And, you know, a few months later, that was going to become almost a national anthem.
Well, this is at a time not long after Disney was making the transition from silent to sound.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Were films written differently in those days? We're talking about shorts.
Yes.
Pretty much all of these things were short films, weren't
yes.
they?
Well, usually it starts with a visualization. You come up with an idea and you start to do sketches about possibilities that could appear on the screen. Scripts can also be written alongside that, but it's a back and forth thing that really works best of all. A lot of animated films today are based on a script and then they try to bounce off of that. But Disney's would go from literally just the idea and trying to come up with what Joe Grant called idea sketches.
Still, you get the feeling that Disney was the one who insisted that films be more formally scripted and there'd be better character and plot development. That was his big breakthrough, wasn't it?
Yes, personality animation. I mean, he really brought it to the most subtle level that really has ever been done. But personality animation came out of who the characters were. So a lot of that had to come from idea sketch people, story people.
And then he he worked on the creation of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the first animated feature film.
Yes, he created two iconic villains, the regal queen in Snow White and the old crone. And those still have the capability of scaring the curds and whey out of children.
Now, as I understand it, different animators would be assigned to different parts of the film. I remember years ago speaking to one of the legendary animators who only did the hi-ho, we're off to work we go sequence, and that took him a very long time because Disney insisted on every little thing moving.
Yes, and moving differently. There were seven different personalities. That was Seamus Culhane that you spoke to.
Yeah.
And, well, the same thing with the sketch artists. There are some who, you know, excelled in the writing aspect of it, the gags that would come out of it. Some of them were more interested in the slapstick. So he kind of had to cast his writer, story people as well as he did his animators.
And Joe Grant wound up working not only in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but also Fantasia, Pinocchio, Dumbo, all hits.
Yes.
So why did he leave it under what seemed to be rather cloudy circumstances?
Well, he was very close to Disney. He was, in fact, his right-hand man for many years and his confidant. He started to become more of a supervisor at the studio. He was doing less and less drawing, and that kind of bothered him. But the big thing that I think really came between he and Walt was that they weren't on the same page regarding the future of the studio. See, Walt Disney wanted to expand after the war years into television, into live-action movies, and also into theme parks. Joe Grant was still in love with animation, and he said, we can develop this even further. We can bring it into adult audiences. It doesn't have to be, you know, ghettoized in child's entertainment.
Well, they were both right, but Disney, I think, probably was more right. It all worked out the way he
imagined.
In
one aspect, yes.
And then, so Joe Grant left, and for 40 years, he did other stuff.
He did. He was an enormously creative man. I mean, he really came up with so many ideas for the films, and he was so influential on it that creativity just bubbled over into his own work, which was ceramics, which he sold, and also greeting cards. He had his own company, which was later bought by a larger company.
What brought him back to Disney in 1989? He's already 81 years old.
Yes, well, they sort of...
Disney was no longer...
No,
Walt
Disney
wasn't
died
there.
In 66, so... It was a question of the young people trying to find their own way at Disney in that period, which was the 1980s, sort of a second renaissance beginning. So they said, well, who's out there who worked directly with Walt? Who can we get who has his thought patterns, who knew him very well? And through one coincidence and another, they came upon Joe Grant. Now, Joe Grant's wife was ill, and she eventually died. And I think this was another factor that said, well, I need something to occupy me. So I'm gonna try to make an impression. I'm going to try to, you know, do some interesting things like I did before.
How much of an impact did he have on the films that he worked on? The Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, Mulan, Aladdin?
Again, enormous, because he was not a storyboard artist per se. He was an idea sketch man. So if you said, well, in Beauty and the Beast, we need these inanimate objects to come to life. Well, the next morning he would have Post-its all over the boards. He would have little sketches of a candelabra that burns itself. He would have a little teapot, a motherly teapot, which they thought, what is this? It looks like a bouncing head. We can't have this in the film. But then he was persistent. Joe Grant was a very persistent artist.
And to some degree, people noticed that. I don't know how much Joe Grant was the reason that people started talking about these new films linking back to bringing back some of the sensibility of the old Disney hits.
Yes, when they realized who they had.
I mean, because we're now talking about computerized animation, a totally different approach.
Indeed, but still, the story is important. And, you know, that's what's interesting about similarities between Walt Disney and Pixar is that Walt Disney said, story is the heart of my organization, and Pixar says story is king. So they do relate. They do relate.
My guest is John Kanemaker, whose latest book from Disney Editions is a gorgeous book in full color, of course, called Two Guys Named Joe, the stories of Joe Grant and Joe Rampt. And Joe Rampt is the other subject of your book. He was working at the at Disney at the time that that Joe Grant came back, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. In fact, he was at the lunch that they invited Joe Grant to just sort of see what this old guy was like. And they were amazed because Joe Grant just started tossing out idea after idea for The Rescuers Down Under, which was the film they were working on at that time. Joe Ranft was a student out of CalArts who had a talent for story, even when he was in school. And they slowly realized what they had at the studio at that time. This is when the studio was in the doldrums, just after, some of the nine old men who were the revered animators were retiring or dying.
Disney been a financial banker of CalArts when it opened?
Yes,
was he seeing it as a place where artists would develop for the future?
He did. He wanted a real mixture of the arts. He wanted dancers to mingle with animators who would mingle with musicians who would mingle with, computer technology. After he died, the studio realized that this could be a way of getting new talent for the films, because they wanted to continue making the animated films.
And not just Joe Ranft, you had Tim Burton there.
Yes.
You had Brad Bird, who directed The Incredibles and mm-hmm. Ratatouille, and John Lasseter, who went on to become one of the founders of Pixar.
That's right.
Were they all friends?
Yes, they were. And in fact, Joe Ranft said, "I always got jobs through my friends." And John Lasseter said that when he first met Joe Ranft, he said, "I never forgot what a great talent he was." And so they worked together on a whole series of films. And I believe that Joe Ranft was really the heart of Pixar in terms of the warmth of humor that they have there, the irreverent, gags that they have in the films. I think he was very important for that.
Although there was a time when he also left Disney. He moved to Seattle.
He did. He was, quotes, burned out. He decided that he and his wife had had enough of this. He was disappointed with the way that The Rescuers Down Under came out as a film, and he blamed himself because he was the supervisor of story. So he went away for about a year or so, and they struggled up there, and he was trying to, make it as a freelancer. And then he got an offer from old friends from CalArts who were working on a new film for Tim Burton called The Nightmare Before Christmas. And one thing just led to another.
Pixar, Toy Story, then Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., Cars.
That's it.
And then he died.
Then he died tragically, yes.
Was he comfortable in the corporate culture of Pixar?
He was. He loved it there because it was his old friends, and they had started this from a studio that had maybe 75 to 100 people.
He also did voices. I always thought the voices had to be done by professional actors.
Well, when the animators or the story people are trying to work out a story, they do scratch tracks. And they use their own voices. So he did Wheezy the penguin for one of the Toy Stories. He did Heimlich, the German caterpillar in Bug's Life. And they usually ended up using his voice because he was such a good actor.
Died at 45 in a car accident.
Yes, terrible.
The book is published by the Disney Company, which now also owns Pixar. Do they have a final say over your content?
No. I'm very lucky. I've done these books. They're very candid books about who these people were. And I've never had any question about what I write or what I select for pictures.
And they just let you take any drawings that you want?
I wish I could take them, but they...
at least use them. Because you have early drawings and storyboards from the archives.
I do. That's one of the great perks of writing for Disney. They let me into the archives, and they let me find the drawings, and then they copy them for me for the books.
And we have a slideshow with some of the drawings on our show page at WNYC.org.
Great.
What's next for you?
Well, tonight I'm actually speaking on Two Guys Named Joe, my new book, at MoMA at 7 p.m. So I hope people will come to the Titus One Theater.
There'll also be some screenings of films that they worked on?
Yes, that'll be there'll be clips tonight, and there'll be full films tomorrow, including Dumbo and Toy Story, but a lot of very interesting shorts that have not been seen for a long time.
I haven't seen Dumbo in a long time.
Well, come on down.
That was the elephant with the big ears, right?
That's right.
There's a link, by the way, to the schedule on our show page at WNYC.org. John Canemaker, thank you so much for being with us to talk about Two Guys Named Joe, master animation storytellers, Joe Grant and Joe Ranft.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.